Everybody is home. Everybody's connected. The world is flat. Everybody's seeing what's going on in Minneapolis. The millennials are tired and fed up and are tired of excuses. We've already been told how to do this, how to protect each other's lives, and all of those plans have failed. So this time we're doing an all options on the table approach. We're not just going with the one route. We're doing all routes because this time it will be different.
This time it can be different. And here's why. Not because of anything that has happened, but because of what you will do, what I will do, what everyone will do this time. It's been a short 3 weeks since the killing of George Floyd right here in our neighborhood of South Minneapolis. And yes, there is a lot of trauma and anxiety, a lot of anger and fear, but that's not all. There's something else that is different. And it's not just here. It's all around the country. It's even spreading across the sea to other countries. What's different is that people are saying enough. And not just angry protesters in the streets this time. Not just black and brown bodied people who have had to live with this inequity day in and day out for generations. But people in power. People in power are saying that the systems and processes that they are responsible for, the ones that are supposed to fix things that don't work, have, in fact, ensured that change, meaningful change, won't happen. They are saying that this time, those systems and processes must change. This is Greg Meyer with Fabric Minneapolis, a community committed to significant relationships built around conversations that matter that we do in what we call a three-stranded way. Thanks for listening to this podcast today. There are many great sources of information and ideas available to you, and I hope you're listening. I hope you're learning and sharing them. I do not compete with them. I want to add to those voices the simple message that this time it can be different. A series of black men don't have to keep dying unjustly one after another until there are none left. There can be an end to it. George Floyd's death can be the last. Yes, it can be different. Not because of what happened this time, but because of what we will do. Now, I gotta say, I'm speaking as a privileged white male to a largely but not wholly white audience. And so I'm saying to us, the people that are sharing my position, we've got work to do. And I hope to stir in your heart the conviction that the work is both bigger than you or I imagine, and it's not as hard as you or I fear. For my black and brown sisters and brothers, immigrants, indigenous, and other people of color, your presence in this work is also essential. But I cannot presume to know what your work is. As I said, you have not been allowed to forget it with the knee of your oppressor on your necks. And as much as I have tried to be a voice and face the racism inside and around me, I've had the luxury of forgetting it. But my prayer this time, my hope, my determination is that we start bearing the weight of the injustice within and around us, and that you will therefore be able to breathe and begin to explore the world freely and find out how it is that you will rebuild your world. And to the best of my resolve, I will strive to keep my white brothers and sisters at the wheel of change. And that's what I want to talk about, the wheel of change. Change is nothing new. Change is everywhere all the time. What generation has seen as much change as we have? I was born in a pre-spaceflight world. My older children in the 30s were born in a pre-mobile phone world. All of Chris and my kids were born in the pre-smartphone era. None of us could possibly have imagined the age that we would live in. There has been so much change so fast. Yeah, the wheel of technological change, it's been spinning faster and faster. We've applauded and embraced it wholeheartedly. Nearly all of our hands have been enthusiastically at that wheel, each in our own ways as inventors, as entrepreneurs, distributors, sellers, and certainly as consumers. But the wheel of social change? Change for justice, change that says that lives matter, including when they are black, change that says all men are created equal can no longer mean all white men are created equal, change that says that we will work with our education system until it works for everyone and doesn't accept that children with a certain skin color are an unavoidable fallout of an otherwise fine system. That kind of change, we've had to break on it. For some reason, those changes have seemed too hard. Going to the moon? No, we could decide that, and we could do it. Being able to access all of human knowledge from a device that fits in our pockets? That was worth pulling all the stops out for. We decided we could do it, and we did it. Why the difference? And why might social change happen this time? On March 25th, George Floyd was killed by a Minneapolis police officer with the complicity of three others. And while George and bystanders pleaded for his life, with that, something broke. After the recent deaths of Philip Quinn, Jamar Clark, and Philando Castile right here in our own metro area, not to mention so many others killed around the country at the hands of police officers, and no meaningful repercussions for those officers involved or consequential reforms to the system, maybe it's because on top of the pressure cooker of the pandemic, the killing of George Floyd was finally too much. This time, is it going to be different? Will there be no more going back this time? Will there be no slowing of the wheel of change this time? I don't know, but here is what I do know. It can be different this time, and it isn't because of what happened this time. It is because of what we will do this time. It depends on you and me taking our place at the wheel, lifting our hands to it, each in our own time and ways and places, with our own voices and gifts and opportunities, each giving it a spin and vowing that this time change will not stop until its work is complete. There is a why and a how and a what to this change. The why is George Floyd and all the pain, death, discrimination, and hatred experienced by countless people because of the color of their skin that culminated in his death on March 25th. Frankly, that's all the reason any of us needs to make the changes needed to undo racism. The how is many-faceted, and we will continue to be one source of that as a community. We will take it up right here in this podcast and on Sunday mornings in our Zoom get-not-togethers and with our kids' gatherings and in our groups. But I'm not talking to the how right now. I want to speak to the what from about 15,000 feet. And the what of making sure that this time is different is momentum. You know, that force that keeps the wheel of change moving until its work is complete. The wheel of change was set spinning many times before. It happened with the Civil War and the Underground Railroad, the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, the passing of the 15th Amendment in 1870, giving the right to vote to everyone despite race or color. It happened with Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Act of 64. Many other events have added the energy to start the wheel of social change turning to create an equitable nation, a nation that didn't thrive on racism. But each time, as the wheel of change began to turn, some people, threatened by the change, added resistance, and far too many people who approved of the change sat back and watched, saying to themselves, it's about time, and the wheel slowed and stopped. This time feels different. As George Floyd's younger brother said at George's funeral in Houston, people finally see it. White people, too. My brother is going to change the world. My guess is that you are wrestling with how to lift your hand and add your energy to the momentum needed to make that wheel turn and to keep it turning. The good news is that it is already turning. We don't have to start it. That's the hardest part, is to get it going in the first place. All we have to do is just keep it going. And do you realize how huge it is that the momentum has already begun? Someone had to give their life to make that happen. People got outraged and demonstrated, and yes, there is violence in the uprising. That is what one should expect when the processes people are supposed to trust to make the change needed actually ensure that no change happens. Now, all we have to do, I said all we have to do, yeah, it's a big all, but all we have to do is keep the wheel turning. We don't have to start it. It's already going. Now, there are two wheels of change. One is inside you. It's inside me too. Only you can tend to that one. But it did get jump-started inside you. All that uneasiness, the tenseness, the vacillating fear, worry, anger, hope, frustration, they attest to that wheel turning and churning inside you. The other wheel is outside you. It's the systems that must change, the conversations that have to be had, the behaviors that must be modified, the rules that need to be rewritten or unwritten. Please don't take your hand off either of those wheels. Things need to be different this time. Now, the reason things can be different this time are twofold. First, because we're at a breaking point and George Floyd's death squeezed toothpaste out of the tube that cannot be squeezed back in. But that's not enough to convince me. We've been here before and got nowhere. You feel resistance to the wheel already, I'm sure. I know I do. Even in these few short weeks, and now that the violent uprisings have stopped and our high alert status is over, there is a tendency to relax. You're tired. I'm tired. The pandemic had us worn thin before all of this. Things are moving fine after all, too. You know, the officers have all been charged. The Minneapolis City Council is going to fix the police force. The governor is talking about wide sweeping change. Good. It's in good hands. And while we sit back and watch, the wheel slows and the hard-earned momentum is lost. And we will wait for another person to give their life to start it again. That's why I don't rely on what already happened to make everything be different this time. The other reason, the one that does make me confident that this time can be different, is what I am seeing happening in you and me and all the people who are speaking out, who are trying to learn, who are being honest about the racism within them and around them. This time we are not relying on a few heroes to push on and to carry the banner. We're weaving ourselves broadly and deeply so that heroes aren't needed. It is something we can all face, something that we can all do. Our hands can all be at the wheel of change that our heart of hearts knows we must help keep turning. I said at the beginning that what is different this time is not what happened, but who we are. And I think we are more deeply and broadly woven than ever before. One of the ways we talk about this world we are woven into at Fabric is the three strands of self, others, and then that third strand, some call God, it's bigger than any word or name, is the fullness and the truth behind and within all things. Well, for that first strand of self all on its own, change is hard. It's a rare person who on their own can continue to push forward on a difficult, uncomfortable task that must break through obstacle after obstacle to get where it's going. That takes a hero. I'm not a hero. Maybe you are, but none of us are called to be a hero. A lone ranger, you were called to be woven. Yeah, and so that second strand, woven with the people in the world around us, we find strength. We're more resilient, we're supported and encouraged, we learn from one another and we're held accountable. Such broad weaving with one another holds promise. But that's not all. There's also the third strand. That's where we are not only woven broadly, but deeply. It's where we not only make ourselves do what we believe is right, but we feel it in our guts, in our bones, and we want to do it. We know there's a different way, even though we've never seen it, even though we don't quite fully understand it in a conscious way, even though we found our own livelihood through something else that must give way for the new creation to be born. We sense what we cannot see. It's not magic. It's just, how do I say it? We wriggle our toes deeply enough into the fabric of existence that we're woven into that we begin to resonate. We begin to sense the way things are, not just the way we are used to things being. That broad and deep weaving is what gives me confidence that things will be different this time. Long, long ago, there was a man named James who was a leader of a movement of people reshaped by Jesus' vision of the world. Yeah, he was one of the guys who wrote some of the stuff in the New Testament. They were a persecuted people because they didn't conform to either the Jewish or the Roman norms of the day. It sounds a bit familiar, even though the circumstances are very different. James wrote this. He said, "My sisters and brothers, whenever you face trials of any kind," okay, that's what we're doing now, he says, "consider it nothing but joy." Classic biblical overstatement, right? I mean, okay, I get it. Accept it willingly. Accept trials cheerfully, but joy? I mean, seriously? I mean, joy means it's not just not so bad, but actually something you're looking forward to, something that's fulfilling for you. I mean, that's where we find joy. How can you begin to say that we should be joyful about facing trials? Yeah, well, he goes on to try to explain it. He goes and says, "because you know that this testing of your faith," okay, I gotta stop there again, "this testing of your faith. These trials are a testing of your faith." Now, first of all, we talk about this a lot with Fabric. Let's get rid of that word faith because it plugs us into some other kinds of thinking. And let's put the word trust in, which is it translationally equivalent. And I think that's what they're really talking about, right? Because you know that this testing of what you trust, this testing of your trust, all right? Here, James is telling us what trials really are. One, they're inevitable, right? So get over that. What is important is that is what trials do to you. Not that they happen or where they come from, but what they do to you. They expose something. They test something very important to you, something you seldom take a look at when you aren't under trial because you have the luxury of not having to do it. And that is what you trust, what you build your world around. Now, people have tended to read this to simply mean that trials are given by God to test our faith, you know, our faith in God. Yeah, not really. That's way too small of a reading. One, God doesn't work that way. God doesn't play games and give a hurricane, a pandemic, a period of massive social unrest to make you be a better Christian, Jew or Muslim or whatever you might happen to do, all right? No, trials simply are our experience of change and growth in the world around us. They are, by nature, messy and hard. But it is how things work. You've dealt with the trials that change brings all your life. And when you face them instead of running from them, you not only adapt, but you learn something about yourself. You learn what you trust. Tough situations bring out the truth. They expose what we are really like, what we really value. In James' language, they test what it is that we say we trust our lives with. And that's important stuff to know. He goes on, when trials expose what it is you and I really trust in life, it, he says, produces endurance. That's the ability to do hard work, like tending to the wheel of change and to keep at it so that its necessary momentum isn't lost. And then James goes on and says, so let endurance complete its work. That's what can be different this time. Our endurance, our perseverance to the change that is the cause of so much discomfort for so many might continue until it completes its work. Don't take your hand from the wheel. Don't sit back and watch. Don't assume others have it. Not until your endurance has completed its work. Then he lets us know why this is joy, not just the right thing to do. He says that we do this not because we're supposed to, but, and these are his words, so that you may be mature and whole. Those are big words. Missing nothing. Oh, boy, we've been missing something pretty important for a long, long time. But so that you may be mature and whole. I think you know exactly what this means. I know I do. Until this examination, this testing of what it is that we really trust has completed its work, we're living a lie. We're living in a way that is out of sync with what is right and what is true and what is good. Or to use our metaphor, we're living apart from, not as a part of, the fabric of existence. And our bodies know it. The lie we live with and the wholeness we lack brings tension and conflict within us and between us, and it starts defining who we are. This is where that joy that James was talking about happens. To be made whole is fulfilling. It's to be freed. It's joy. Maybe a joy you didn't know was on the other side, but joy that awaits you. Joy that your inner self already knows is there and is calling you to. That's why this time can be different. Lots of people, even white people, even people in power, are weaving themselves broadly and deeply enough to know that things can be different. And if they are, it would be better for everyone. There will be resistance. The momentum of the present moment will be challenged from without, from people who are invested in the status quo, and from within, from our own fatigue and our desire for normal. But enough of us have tasted the joy of what can be to ever forget its flavor. So here's my ask. Don't quit. Don't sit down or go to the sidelines. Don't leave it to the experts, the pros, the people really upset with us all. They aren't enough. We are enough. Stay at it. Let endurance complete its work. I don't ask you to be a hero. I ask you to be who you are, whole and mature. Lift your hand, your voice, your talents, your circle of influence to this wheel of change and keep the momentum going. As you do, you will experience how good it feels. It isn't so hard because it is so hard. It's hard because you and I aren't used to it. And as you do it, you will discover new ways and new places to lend your hand. My ask isn't for how hard you have to do it or what way you must do it, but that you continue to do it, whatever your ways are. in coming weeks, we'll bring you down from this 15,000 foot view of the what that you and I might be doing so that we can live out an anti-racist life. But don't wait for us. Your friends, your neighbors, they're doing it all the time. Use each other to explore and to try things. You don't need to change the world. Remember, just keep your hand at the wheel. We will also be helping us look at the how. Next week, Nick Tassler, a change expert with major corporations around the world and a Fabric friend, is going to help us see how we can adapt and how adaptation to changes like we are experiencing right now is not just something that we can do, but something that we are, well, adapted to do. Okay, one last thought, and it needs very little elaboration. And it's one more reason why I believe this time will be different. And now that the wheels of change are turning inside us and we are committed to helping each other keep our hands there at that wheel. It's this. You see, there are two kinds of change. Change that you are part of making happen and change that you are not part of making happen. Or to put it another way, change that happens to you and change that you help bring about. Guess which one is easiest to accept. And be part of the change. Raise your hands and your hearts and your voices. Find ways that stretch you and fulfill you to keep the change going until it has completed its work. And then do not tire of telling its story, lest future generations should make the same mistake we did. We can help each other do this. It will be different, say it with me, this time. Thanks for listening.